former state representative, former lieutenant governor candidate as well. She has made the announcement today that she is going to run for Senate District 57, which is currently held by a DFLer, Greg Clausen, a DFLer out of Apple Valley, who is serving his third term. It's unclear, though, if he intends to run again. Erin McQuaid is kind enough to join us today to talk about her decision to run for Senate. Erin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, it's my absolute pleasure. I'm going to ask you from the get-go here, because you were brilliant here when you were in the House of Representatives. I was a big fan of yours. I thought it was a good bold move by Erin Murphy when she brought you on her ticket there. It has not been the same without you there. I got to tell you, it's kind of glad to see that you're going back at it and running for office here.
Well, thank you. You know, it's been really fun, though. I've spent the last few years doing advocacy work on the outside and really working in the movement for reproductive health rights and justice, for LGBTQ rights, for, workers' rights and pay equity and all of those things. And so I've always been able to say, I love being in the legislature. I love being outside the legislature, and I'm really excited to have the opportunity to go back.
What prompted this decision for you to say, you know what, I want to go for the Senate seat?
That's a great question. I always said that I would run for office again when I could answer three questions: why me, why this, and why now? And I would say, since 2018, I've never been able to answer all three at the same time. And I will tell you that over the last few months, I've just been, I've noticed that a lot of us are stuck in despair, right? We have cascading, compounding crises, systemic racism, climate change, this pandemic, misinformation. And I look around and I see that people feel that, but I feel tremendously hopeful about our future. And I think it is because this really crucial moment has given us the opportunity to actually fix the problems that plague us at their root cause instead of just dealing with their manifestations and their outcomes. And so what I think this moment demands, right, it has demanded more energy, more time, more everything from every single person. That's going to be true of our elected officials. And I think this moment calls for bold visionary leaders who are ready to get in there and do that work to solve the big problems and not tinker on the edges, because I think that's what people are hungry for.
I'm going to bring this up, and I mean, obviously, I'm not trying to create any bad blood feuds or anything like this. Greg Clausen is currently the DFLer there. Now, it's not known if he's planning on running again. He is 74, but he's held the seat for a while. It's the third term. He might decide to run again here. Can you talk a little bit about why the decision, currently a DFL held seat, what is not happening here, do you feel, that needs to be addressed in your district?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of intrigue about, who's challenging whom and who holds the seat. But really, the seat belongs to the people of this community. And we don't know what the legislative lines will look like after redistricting, which happens, after caucuses and before conventions. We don't know what people plan to do. Greg has not announced his plan. But this isn't about Greg, right? It's about our community. And it is about the vision that I have for our bright future and the work and, the vigor that I want to bring to the legislature. And I want to bring that vision to our community and let them say, yeah or no, right? That's really what this is about, is bringing that bold vision to the voters and letting them have their say.
And once again, I am not trying to create waves here, but so you're saying there's not necessarily anything specific that Clausen has done or has not, championed. It's just more about, this is about your motivations and your goals.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We thank Greg for his years of service. And again, okay, it really isn't about him at all. It's about my vision for what we can accomplish together and what, human-made problems can be solved by humans. Mm-hmm. And I really think I'm really excited to do that work together.
What, we should mention Senate District 57 as it stands now, because you did bring up the whole redistricting question, which is gutsy. It's a little gutsy. You're going to claim you're going to run in a district when really we're not sure exactly how these districts are going to look when it comes up here. But there's a decent chance there's going to be definitely more Democratic districts once this redistricting is done, just because the population growth has happened in Minneapolis-St. Paul metro. And so it's going to happen there. What in the current district, just going off what's going on in 57, which is the South Metro Apple Valley area, goes out east and goes over towards, I think it's Cedar Avenue on the west side. But what are some of the things that you are looking at that you say, you know what, these need to be addressed in this district?
Absolutely. I think that there are, we have to make deep investments in our human and public infrastructure that includes childcare and elder care and disability services, that includes deep investments in public education. that includes investments in, you know, the people in the community. We know that women are getting pushed out of the workforce because they can't afford to send their kids to daycare. And now they're caring for, you know, kids at home. Some people are working at home while also educating their children at home. I ran for state house in 2016 because of the issue of childhood hunger. That has not decreased. It has increased and it has spread. We know that seniors are hungry. We know that college students are hungry, and I really do want to address not just the issue of hunger, but the system that allows people to, you know, go hungry in the wealthiest nation in the world. And then for me, reproductive rights, health, and justice continues to be a top issue. We see that Roe v. Wade is, you know, imminently under attack. It doesn't exist anymore in Texas. The Supreme Court is set to hear something about it in December. I've been leading a 26-member coalition to advance reproductive justice as the advocacy director at Gender Justice, and I look forward to bringing that same vigor into the Senate. And then, you know, climate justice is always top of mind. I was the only freshman Democrat who was on the Energy Committee in the House, and I would look forward to bringing that same expertise into the Senate if elected.
I'm glad
you just casual things.
Just a little here and there. You know, when you mentioned reproductive rights, I mean, once again, if anyone thinks these Republicans are going to just stop at just trying to stop abortion, I mean, it seems like their goal is basically getting rid of birth control, getting rid of any kind of, you know, system that helps out lower income women with women's health care. I mean, it really is a scary future if they have control. We need to actually have people that are advocates for women. God forbid we have actually advocates for women and women's health care issues. So, you know, heaven forbid we actually push forward with that. I want you to bring up the food thing, though, because I'm so happy. And this is one of the things you talked about this back when you're in the House, and, you know, hunger. It is such an important issue for me. And just I'm wearing it on my sleeve. I'm a Catholic. I was a Catholic. For me, feeding people is one of the base things we can do as human beings to take care of other human beings. We had Tori Westrum, the senator from the western part of the state, early this year, try to basically prevent people with food stamps from being able to go over and getting food at farmers market, the freshest, most available.
Bucks.
Exactly. He tried to kill that off just because he wanted to be mean. I mean, it really is amazing to me that there are just so many people out there that with this need, as you describe, it is everywhere in every community. There are people hungry right now. We still have Republicans who are saying, no, we're not going to give them food.
I know. And I had a representative, you know, I started the Childhood Hunger Caucus when I was in the House, and I would love to bring that back. But I had a representative look me in the face and say, I've never met a hungry kid. And I was like, well, then you've never met a kid. I mean, the hunger is rampant and it's everywhere. And we know hungry kids can't learn. Hungry seniors can't, you know, survive. College students can't learn. I mean, this is a basic human need that we have to not only thrive, but exist, is food. And so we really do have to tackle this issue. And there is a systemic problem when people can't afford to pay the rent or their mortgage and feed their family in the same month.
There's no way in the world I can convince you to tell me which House rep said they have never seen a hungry child. Is there any way I could convince you to tell me who said that?
You twisted my arm. It was Drazkowski.
It was Draz? Oh, yeah. Okay. I will. I think it's going to be time for us to go down and visit his district and see exactly what's going on with his constituents down there.
I know. It's very dire everywhere, but particularly in rural Minnesota, where there aren't as many food shelves and transit options to get there.
Absolutely.
Which I mentioned to him.
Well, and you said exactly, and that there's the other complexity of it. It's the people in rural Minnesota where the hunger is that much more complex issue, because just getting to the food is a difficult thing. Where, you know, you need to have these Meals on Wheels programs. You need to have a vibrant, you know, assistance from the state to help out the food shelves that are there. And they're against it, and it blows my mind.
Or even the grocery stores, right? Yeah. Because grocery stores are dying in smaller towns. You know, it's really sad that there are places where you can't access basic services because technically there aren't enough people there. I mean, I just don't think that the size of your town should determine whether or not you have basic services.
We should also talk a little bit about the makeup of the Senate here. It is woefully white and male. It is in a state which is getting more and more diverse by the day. Frankly, the Senate does not represent, you know, when you look at the Senate, it does not seem to represent the state. It is a very white male Senate. Talk a little bit about that, because obviously candidates like yourself would change up that dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, in the 163 years that the current iteration of the Minnesota government exists, we haven't had a Black woman in the Senate ever. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think you can have democracy without Black women. You know, we've made all these policy decisions for every Minnesotan for 163 years without the input of Black women in the upper chamber. And in addition to the fact that I look forward to bringing my community's voice to the Senate, bringing that unique perspective, that intersectional framework, I think is really important too. And I would also be, if elected, the first out lesbian. I shouldn't say the only, you know, the first lesbian. There probably have been before, but the first out one, for sure.
Well, and that's another thing too. I mean, when you, okay, first of all, Black women, I believe in the state of Minnesota, I think it's the fourth largest, you know, minor group, white men, white women, Black men, Black women. You know, it's impossible to believe that's hard to comprehend. We've not had one Black woman in the Senate, as well as also 10% of the population is LGBTQ. How in the world is this even, you know, it does boggle the mind how this has maintained a, you know, 1950s standard as far as the makeup.
Well, I will say, you know, there is something kind of sad about being able to mount a historic campaign in 2021, but I look at every barrier broken as a way to throw open the door. I would hope that I won't be the only Black woman elected to the Minnesota Senate this year. I think there are a few running. So among the first, but not the only. And I think that, you know, it's hard to be what you can't see. And so I stand on the shoulders of people like Karen Clark and Susan Allen and Alan Spear and Scott Dibble, you know, queer leaders who came before me and certainly showed me that you can be a lesbian or gay and be elected official. And hopefully one day we will have our first transgender member of the legislature. The younger generation below us, I mean, 10% right now, but you should know that, you know, high school and college students overwhelmingly are identifying more and more along the gender spectrum and the sexuality spectrum. And so I really think that will continue to change. And this is just, I'm a canary in the coal mine, right? More to come.
I have a 20-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 14-year-old. I'm going to just say this about that generation. They are done with our crap. They are done with
our
crap. Oh, they are. They are tired of it. I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad to hear you're running. I want to drive people, if people would like to find out more about your Senate race, your Senate campaign, what's the website that they can go to?
Real easy. It's erinmayquade.com. erinmayquade.com. And I'm on all the social medias with the same handle, Erin May Quade.
And you know, if you never caught her House, you know, career when she was there, she was brilliant there. If she does win the Senate seat, I have zero doubt. As a matter of fact, I think we need the brilliance clearly with the leadership that we've had in the Republicans in the Minnesota Senate. We need Erin May and more people like her, her voices in that Senate. Final thing I'm going to ask you, since I've asked everyone that's been on the show today, and this is completely frivolous and has no point. all right, so Gaffigan and Jeff Foxworthy both are going to film their Minnesota shows for a Netflix special. If you had your choice of going to see Gaffigan or Foxworthy, who would you go see?
Jim Gaffigan. Yeah. I will tell you this. I love Jim Gaffigan. I love food-related humor. And my brother had his appendix out. It was years ago. And I sent him one of Gaffigan's specials. And he texted me, he's like, I'm going to kill you. I almost burst a stitch watching the special. So I would definitely go see Jim Gaffigan.
I am with you. His whole thing on bears, too, is ultimately classic. Signed, The Bears. I would agree with you. Everyone else wanted to see Foxworthy. You and I, if we could ever manage to find the tickets, we could go see Gaffigan.
We'll be at Gaffigan's show talking about Hot Pockets.
Erin May Quade, once again, it's www.erinmayquade.com, running for Senate District 57. Erin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.